Today is a high day, this eighth day feast. We have brought and we will give an offering to God at the conclusion of this brief message. So at this time, if you need an envelope, you can raise your hands and the ushers can get you an envelope. It's my understanding we're down to just white envelopes. They may not have anything on them. That's okay. Simply put your first and last name, your mailing address, your offering amount, and if you have it, your subscriber number beginning with the letter U. If you'd like to, you can go ahead and turn to where we'll first read. We'll begin in 2 Chronicles chapter 7 today. As we gather for these 8 days every year, it's a time of wonder, it's a time of curiosity. And from that wonder and curiosity often comes questions that we are familiar with. For example, so many feasts begin with the question, why are you here? And as we move along into the feast, then we begin to ask ourselves, what will it be like? What will I be doing? And then as the end of the Feast of Tabernacles quickly comes, as it often does, and we approach this eighth day feast, there's another question that comes up in our minds. Sometimes it's spoken, and it's a very simple question. It can be expressed in two words. What now? What now? It's already been alluded to the last couple of days, but we know that we do have to return home. We pull up the stakes, and we will be returning this evening, tomorrow, perhaps even Sunday, but we do have to return home. And to go back to that analogy that's been on our minds all week of the Hebrews 11 journey, we've parked our wagons short of the destination this week. We've been on the plains. We've, yes, been able to be with other travelers on the journey, and we've stood beside the beautiful clear waters of a spring that have restored our soul, and we've replenished our wagons with that food that God has given us, but this is not where we're going. We still have rivers to cross and mountains to cross. And so, again, the question is, what now? Well, last couple of days, that has been kind of a topic. And today I'd like to continue that vein of thought answering that question. We're going to do it by going to words that we're familiar with. They were the words that closed the opening night video. They were words that I want to bring to us today because they are heavily themed to the eighth day. God spoke them 3,000 years ago, and the time that he spoke them was either the evening as the eighth day ended or perhaps the next evening, but it was very close to the eighth day and adjacent to the eighth day and very themed to it. And it is 2 Chronicles 7. And just a little background on what it is that we're going to be reading, and it will be verses 12 through 14, but in the previous chapter, chapter 6, the setting is, this is the dedication of the temple. Solomon and Israel are dedicating this temple. This is where God will dwell with men. And on the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, Solomon stood up and prayed a prayer of dedication for all to hear. And it was a lengthy prayer, but in that prayer, there were questions. This is a time of questions. Solomon, unfortunately, knew that even though, yes, in the excitement that God is going to dwell here, he knew that Israel would stray. So he asked God, if your people turn from you, if they turn their back from you, if they turn away, and the result is, if there's pestilence on the land, or even they are taken to a strange land, if these people who are called by your name, if they repent, and they call on you, will you hear from heaven? God did not immediately answer. The feast continued. God was clearly there. Fire came down, consumed the offerings and sacrifices, but God did not immediately answer. It was not until the conclusion of the eighth day. Here in 2 Chronicles 7, let's pick up here in verse 9. It says, "And on the eighth day they held a sacred assembly, for they observed the dedication of the altar 7 days and the feast 7 days." Now let's continue here in verse 12. The words we're familiar with. Verse 12, "Then the Lord appeared to Solomon by night," this is after the eighth day, "and said to him, I have heard your prayer and have chosen this place for myself as a house of sacrifice. When I shut up heaven and there is no rain, or command the locusts to devour the land, or send pestilence among my people, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land." It brings a different light to it when you consider that this is an exchange between Solomon and God. Solomon asks the question, God answers. And therefore, this really resonates with the parable of the prodigal son, does it not? It's the state of humanity, the opening pages of the Bible. Mankind, we turn our backs on God. But he says, if you return to him, he will hear you. He will bring you back. These words, they were an assurance to Solomon and Israel at that time, to their generations after that. They're words for us today. They apply their directions. But especially, these are eighth day themed words that really look to the future and will be made full in the future. I want to point out just a few phrases, three phrases here, as we're about to turn to the next verse. The first one, notice, called by God's name. I want you to take note of that. We're going to see that here in a second. Second, seeking God's face. And then third, healing or healing of their land. I'll ask you if you have a bookmark, keep it here, or if you just place your finger here. We'll be back to this section in 2 or 3 minutes. Let's now turn to Revelation 22, final book of the Bible. We'll read verses 1 through 4. And of course, we're reading the section that looks forward to that glorious city coming, that new Jerusalem, and what will it be like then? What will life be like? And of course, this eighth-day feast is anchored in the words of Revelation 20 through 22. And while the words we are about to read, they will be fulfilled well into the future, we see themes repeated from the words we just read from 3,000 years ago. Consistency of God's word. Revelation 22, verse 1. And again, look for those three phrases. "And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. And in the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations, and there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. They shall see his face, and his name shall be on their foreheads." The healing is great. Seeing his face, that's wonderful. But perhaps the most beautiful words in what we just read is at the very end. His name shall be on their foreheads. What does that mean? They will carry God's name, their identity, their purpose, their meaning will be with the Most High. It is very sad how much our world has fallen, how much culture has fallen. People look for meaning and purpose, identity. And it's found in all the wrong places. False gods, false religion. People look to even the bodily functions, and I'm keeping that vague and general, but for their meaning and purpose and identity. It's very sad. but looking forward to what this will be like. Life in the new city, New Jerusalem, it truly is beautiful. They will only be known by God's name. There will be no Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, communism, secular humanism. And I would say it would be a memory, but I hope it's not even a memory as time goes on. No, God will restore that relationship. They will be called by God's name. But to go back to the question, what now? Brethren, we are called by God's name at this time, are we not? Leading up to the feast and here at the feast, how many times have we heard? We go where God has placed his name. How does God place his name somewhere, primarily? It's through his people. God's name is here multiplied many times over because you are here with God's Spirit living in you and working around you. And so let's now return, 2 Chronicles 7, because we are called by God's name now. As we begin to wrap up and answer our question, I want to highlight the first two instructions here. If you'll notice in 2 Chronicles 7:14, there are really four things that we're told to do as God's people. Humbling ourselves, praying, seeking his face, and we heard about that from Mr. Klor, and then finally turning or repenting from evil ways. Getting rid of that baggage that holds us down on the journey. But again, as I conclude with the takeaways, I'm going to offer just two, and it's the first two instructions. The first, humble ourselves. What now? Well, we walk forward in humility. We've heard about humility this week, haven't we? Throughout the messages, we've heard it in the prayers. There is a saying that I find very helpful when describing humility. It's not a definition, it's just a saying that I find especially helpful. And it's the saying's been adapted and passed around over time, so it's difficult to really give credit to one person. But the saying goes like this: humility isn't thinking less of yourself, but rather thinking of yourself less. I find that particularly helpful. Let me ask you, do you feel uplifted here at the end of this week, or do you feel down? I think the overwhelming answer is we feel lifted up. God has lifted us up. Do you feel pride in yourself, or do you feel a sense of humility? Again, I would say humility. Humility does not mean you have to just lower yourself into a state of being puny. Colossians 2 speaks of a false humility twice. They were dealing with a religion that falsely lowered themselves and abstained from the good things, the physical things, to give a sense of humility. But that's not what it's about. You know, we've heard about it this week. Humility is replacing my ways, my thoughts, with that of God, so that we can help him bring the multitudes to glory, which will come to pass in the greatest sense when this day is fulfilled. The very heart of humility is understanding and believing that everything is not about me. We have spent these last several days looking forward to that time when salvation is available to the multitudes. And remember, that is the destination. Can you see it? Do you long for it? And so we need to leave here, walking forward in humility, knowing that we are called at this time to help in this process. And then that second instruction from 2 Chronicles 7:14. Pray. We heard in the opening night video that we should pray earnestly for God's kingdom to come. We do that throughout the year, and when we do that at other times, it's often, well, yes, the world is bad, and so we long for your kingdom, God, to come. But after this week, it's a little bit different praying that prayer because we've seen just a glimpse. And so we know what we're looking for. So I encourage you, yes, pray thy kingdom come, but if possible, sustain what we've had here. Not just for this world to go away, but for what is coming. Also, I'd like to offer up what I heard a speaker at the feast recommend many years ago as a suggestion. He said to pray that God will write these days on your heart. That God will write these days on your heart. I've made it a point every year to pray that. I've shared it with others, and it's wonderful advice. The new covenant is, at this point, just in its infancy. It's very small. It will grow and flourish in the thousand-year reign, and ultimately in the continuation of God's kingdom. That is when the new covenant will truly become massive in scale. And the very core of the new covenant is God will write his law on your heart. Pray that God writes these days on your heart. A good prayer to pray is that if you're alive next year and you're able to travel, that God will return you to these days to refresh you and to nourish you. You may not remember every message from this feast, but pray that God will write those lessons on your heart. Pray for the encouragement and inspiration to take what you've learned and let it provide the fuel for you to help God in the future and now in bringing many children to glory. So while we may not always ask the question out loud, it is still there in our minds in some form as we approach this final high feast day of the year. What now? I suggest that we go forward walking in humility and prayer. We do this now looking to that coming wonderful time when so many will actually see God's face. There will be healing for the nations, and the multitudes will be called by God's name. As I mentioned, we will be giving an offering to God here shortly. Mr. Slocum covered offerings extensively on the first day, so we don't need to repeat that. But it is going to be returning to at least one of his verses. If you will now turn to 2 Corinthians 9. Mr. Slocum did cover this on the first day, speaking of the purpose and purposeful giving. Of course, we're familiar with these words. It talks about giving and offering in the context here. It's, of course, a congregation giving to another congregation. That is an offering. And even when we help others through that agape love, it's ultimately unto God, is it not? 2 Corinthians 9, let's begin in verse 7. It says, "So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God does love a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you." We heard about that, didn't we? "That you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work." Yes, we realize that giving is not limited only to offerings. And we did give offerings on the first day of the feast, but we've also been giving daily to God and to each other, haven't we? But an offering does involve giving, so the principle applies. And I'm just now remembering I did not get the offertory music message, and I think Mr. Mez may have it, so somebody will walk it up here. I'm seconds away. But notice verse 15. It says, "Thanks to be God, be to God for his indescribable gift." Yes, there is indeed that joy of the realization of being a child of God. And on this eighth day, the joy is multiplied as we anticipate so many becoming true children of God. So we will now shortly give an offering with that joy of God's blessings. And we do so with the instruction that's given in Deuteronomy 16 to appear before the Lord three times a year with this final offering of this third and final season of the year. Thank you, Mr. Delmater. Thank you for saving. As we give this offering, we will enjoy beautiful music. This will be a piano solo presented by Delmater. The title is Sonata Pathetique, composed by Beethoven. We will now give the offering.